fix them, could we cheat the level kappa? And so close your eyes, and they both see x and sigma. So which notation should they use?
X.
C. Yeah, okay. So C, we attach category D modules.
Yeah. One of the first things you teach when you teach a calculus course is that nothing depends on notations.
Except understanding.
So now, so here's what I don't fully understand. So there is something called boundary conditions. For dimension one.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it understand? So is it correct that boundary conditions for two tests?
So no. So, so in a topology, if it was really a four-dimensional topological field theory, and we're only looking at topological questions, then they would form a three category. That's right. But there are some issues with the topological, and also we want to ask questions which are holomorphic, and so I'm not sure what the correct name for it is. Is it a category of vertex algebras? Of category of current categories.
If you fix say S1 or C, then you are getting some sort of two categories, some sort of categories. So.
That's right.
So C is not fixed. It's rather, so we know the names of some of the objects. So Neumann is one of the names.
Yes.
So Neumann is a boundary condition.
Yes.
It's another name. Now it's yet another name.
Yes.
So let's leave it open for the time being. This is a three category. So now, by the way, so these guys, I mean, what do you call them? Topological or holomorphic? Neumann,
They're topological,
yeah.
With commas.
Position marks.
Yes.
And what position marks mean again?
I think, how can they be topological if, for example, brain of operas depends on complex structure?
Well,
that's the
quote. It's not my
quote. Well, I mean, it kind of depends. I mean, also your category. I mean, this category attached to Riemann surfaces is well, not exactly topological. So, but it's topological in some kind of. I mean, formally, you need the complex structure. Kind of doesn't really depend on complex structure. So,
yeah.
So it's not some kind of strictly.
I think I can answer the question a little bit. So, topological does not, in physics, topological really means independent of the metric. Usually means there is a flat, something which depends flatly on the metric. So, the opers depend nicely on the complex structure, right? There is a Hamiltonian, like the brain of Hoppers is a dimodulo on G, but also on space of complex structure.
Yeah, but isn't it more precise if you would say, okay, you start in six dimensions, then you have choices on which part of the six dimensions you're making it topological and on which part you're making it conformal. However, just let me finish this one sentence. However, of course, in the end of the day, there should be some equivalence between the story which ends up being topological on the surface and the one which is conformal, that is chiral on the surface. So, and this equivalence will involve indeed sort of integrating this parallel connection which mm-hmm. identifies sort of the fibers with respect to different choices of complex structures. I think this should be.
Okay, so there is ambiguity about the use of orbital topology. So there are boundary conditions. So here's question one.
So one possible meaning of topological is, in particular, there are no. So correlation functions of local operators don't depend on the position of the local operators, for example. That's a very mild sense.
We are two. Category. So, or for example, our output.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we'll see. Okay,
yes.
We'll see. So here's question one. Well, as far as I understand, to this four-dimensional theory, to the circle, there two categories. In the same way, as opposed to the closed Riemann circle that corresponds to one category, but the circle that corresponds to two categories.
Yes.
So there's a local two category that Sam will talk about tomorrow. By the way, so we know what it is as mathematicians, so we just sort of say what we think it is.
Yes.
So this is a category of categories in which the loop group acts. So that's, I can write T or K, whichever you prefer. That's what they think it is. So my question is, do you guys expect to have a functor from here to here?
Yes. I have an algorithm.
Pardon?
I have some sort of algorithm.
Algorithm.
Not a functor.
So basically two, a boundary condition here, they would correspond
exactly
to local, an object in this category.
Exactly. If you pretend that the thing on the left is a category, then this is a functor.
So two,
functor
two,
is too strong a word. It's not.
Two, so let us say to a boundary condition, I can correspond to
an object.
An object. Okay, so that was question one. So, that seems to be a verb. So here's other things that occurred in specific other stuff. So what occurred was the following. To a boundary condition, there corresponds a factorization category by some algorithm. So question two, so boundary condition, to one boundary condition, there corresponds a factorization category. Factorization is the same word for chiral. And moreover, this activation category is equipped with extra structure. So namely, there is, and here I'm being, so that's what we saw in examples, but I'm not sure if I'm missing an additional part of structure. Seems that in examples that we saw, this activation category is equipped with an additional functor to the modus undandi. So let me just, examples of this kind of thing. So if I say Neumann, the corresponding factorization category is what we call Kardan-Lustig.
Yes.
And this functor is what we call localization. It's a procedure that takes object Kardan-Lustig category on the round space and uses it in order. By the way, so one has a guess to what is the category. Let me propose my guess, and then we'll see if you guys confirm it.
Yes.
So Neumann corresponds to the following category of an action of the loop group. It's the entire category of Kac-Moody modules.
Right. Which?
In the delay, there is the following relationship between this category and this category, namely, Kac-Moody category is you take Kac-Moody modules, and you take objects that are invariant with respect to arcs. So let me do.
I think this picture is going to be universal. So for every boundary condition, there's going to be a category, a localization functor, and.
Will be universal, you say?
Yes.
Let me just.
So we can replace Neumann with any boundary condition, and you should have the same collection of structures.
Let's put up some examples, and then I'll ask for more examples. Just. So here is Dirichlet. Here's my understanding. So the category that it corresponds to, again, following the end of this topic, will category of D modus and affine Riemannian. And the functor onto Banji is the functor of direct image.
Yes.
Category, I mean the factorization category or an object of the local category.
No. To a boundary condition, there corresponds a factorization category.
But also, this should correspond an object of your local
category.
Yeah,
so I'm putting the counterpart of this. Here the factorization category is Kardan-Lustig. Here, the factorization category is the most of the function. And the object of the local category, so now let me see, corresponds to, my understanding, is D modules on the entire loop group. And indeed, the same relationship holds. So, D modules on the affine Riemannian is you take the models of a loop group and you put you impose a covariance condition with right with respect to objects. All right. Third example.
But I can ask a question about this example. So here, on this category, you have two actions of the loop, left and on the right, right? Well, what does it correspond from the point of view of this Dirichlet boundary conditions? What does it correspond to?
Sorry?
As if this guess is right, then
so
this category has two actions of the loop.
So I've been discussing a little bit this with Phil. And right, so intuitively, this generic, right, let's say this, there is, I need a picture, sorry. So take this object, which is some boundary condition from the final sample, okay? So this gives a boundary condition for an object in the tree here. So one element of these two categories, which is boundary condition for the final sample. Now, there is somehow this category before taking invariance, right, wants to be things you can do, the junction between the boundary condition compactifier and the circle in itself. This is what this is going to be. On the other hand, the category of lines of the boundary can be used to do things like this, which are, I put a line at the tip of a cigar. Right? This gives me and intuitively somehow you get this by closing this. So I would suspect that this operation of taking one to G.
Essentially just kind of taking harm from this affine Grassmannian, and we understand this affine Grassmannian as what is called the trivial defect. And trivial defect is exactly kind of the closing up this
capping
exactly, without doing anything.
That's right. So there is a defect which is nothing defect, which is. Do you want to? And I forget the notation. The models.
I mean, what's the thing I need to explain?
Can you just write down that statement, categorical statement corresponding to this picture?
Yes, I can try.
Please.
So
taking invariants with respect to GT.
I don't know where to start, but you can put it here. Say, please, given this boundary condition, either Dirichlet Neumann Lamport, this is 3D boundary condition. There is a sort of algorithm on assignment for say S1 computation or C computation, and result is going to be an object of two categories. Here it's an object of, I'm thinking about the A sign, I guess.
And to the disk, generally speaking, right?
Right, so.
You associate.
That's right, so I mean, I don't know, I mean, it depends on like how much time I'm going to spend, but let me just kind of say the result and maybe if people are curious, I can say more, but right. And what I'm going to say is that actually, if you have surface defects, you also have an algorithm, sort of the as an object of these two categories. And given these two categories, from objects, you do really need for a picture. So you are thinking of 3D boundary condition, but that's some implication means that you are drawing this picture. So for example, I'm thinking of particular free boundary condition, say for continuous, say Neumann. And as a C2, if I think of sort of trivial defect, namely the tapping.
But defect is not the same as boundary condition.
It is not, but yeah.
But they're both boundary conditions for the for the 3D theory. So there are two ways you can make a boundary condition in 3D. You can take a boundary condition in 4D, or you can just take a smooth closing off of this, something that whose boundary is a circle. So a cigar, possibly decorated by a surface defect, one or more surface defects. Right. In principle, you could even have a whole Riemann surface with surface defects instead.
But this capping serves both goals, right? It is also a boundary condition.
Yeah.
So let's say, so there are numbers, we call it I, E, which corresponds to the undecorated disk. So if I took home from the rolled up boundary condition to the undecorated disk, I'm sort of asking what's associated to a disk with boundary B. And that is the category of line defects at the boundary. So it should always be the case that if this was the image of the boundary, so boundary compared to S1, this should be the lines from the boundary. So presumably this formula and expression for that.
Yes.
So if you can, if this was not a trigger defect, then you cannot think of this as a capping. So you are losing this three-dimensional information. So only with the trigger defect, you are reading this as a three-dimensional picture, and then line defects are reading like this. But for example, if you're thinking of come from ES1 with ES1 itself, you are getting 2D line defects. Like leaving on this after computation.
It's just something else.
Yeah. So it's something else, and which is like for like the Harchandra category and so on for Neumann.
So let's get there.
So a question I could ask is why is that always a factorization category?
Yes, indeed.
So which condition does this object have to satisfy for this to be always set?
This is question one. And question two, so maybe I start in a different direction. I start with an object in this local two category.
Yes.
What kind of structure is needed on this object to lift it to a boundary condition?
Right. How do you recognize it?
How do I recognize it? So here is a one feature that it has, that if we take invariance with respect to arcs and consider the corresponding factorization category, it has this functor to here.
Yes.
So I think it seems to be an additional structure.
Yes.
So yeah.
Right. So the image of surface defects would not have that problem, because it would not come from under condition. The identity object would not have that problem. There is a subcategory which comes from 3D.
Boundary conditions.
Boundary conditions.
So let me just finish the last example that we understand.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a norm.
Yeah.
So what it corresponds to is it's what we call the width. It's the width category of Lambert's line. And it has this functor to D more than G. We call it Pontarian series.
Yes.
And here, so the corresponding object category is what we call a Whitaker category of the loop group itself.
Yes.
Again, the same relationship.
Last couple of two are related.
it's actually, let me, for the sake of discussion, it's actually, or it's actually, let me say it's the same.
So,
I mean, Dimas talk for his own purposes, he needed a slightly globalized version, but he could have not done it. And it would be the same category. Let me just say that these two are languages dual to each other. These two. All right, but now here comes my real question. So that was a kept puzzling. So, given two objects of this local category, we can take the category homes between them.
Yes.
So, well, it's some well-defined thing, and we can say in each of these examples what the homes are.
Okay.
Then you were talking about the category of junctures.
Yes.
Junctions, not junctions.
Junctions. Between boundary conditions.
Yes, I
know. So, and apparently there's a functor. If there's a functor from boundary conditions to the local category,
yes,
to every junction there corresponds.
And also it has something to do with vertex algebras.
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
So I would like to kind of...
Every junction I will attach a vertex algebra first. And then we can take modules for the algebra. And that will be a category. So I have D1, D2, and J12, and I can get the vertex algebra.
It's a vertex algebra which always contains Katsumudi inside.
Right, which is equipped with the functor from lines of D1 times lines of D2 to A mod.
Well, this is that would be great. So this is what we call. This is L1. So that factorization category is it.
Who is L1?
So
it's the factorization.
It's the factorization category.
Yes.
So let's
go upstairs.
B goes to L1.
That's right.
It's for which is 3D line defense.
Now, do I distinguish modules of vertex algebra modules and modules of the underlying? So for Katsumudi, when you write G-mod, they're not really vertex algebra modules, right?
G-mod meaning?
When you write modules,
yeah,
for... at some point, I was confused. I thought I saw a modules for Katsumudi.
Yes,
you're right.
Yes.
It's
KM modules.
Yes.
Yes.
So these are really vertex algebra modules,
yes,
for Katsumudi.
Yes.
Good. So this is the same kind of module, vertex algebra module. Now, I could try to now map A. So I need to attach a category now to A. Which can play the whole analogous to this. So I could, I don't know, I can write a mod.
Then there's a question to ask. So on the one hand, what's your notation?
I need to attach something which lives between the home, which lives in the home. I want to attach something which lives inside home of B1 compactified on the circle and B2 compactified on the circle.
So when you write B of S, object of the local to category, right?
That's right. So this could have called num on S1.
No, this is L.
This was L.
Is before you take G of Y and VR, and so after.
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 Yes. Yeah. L is on a disk instead of the S1. So this is.
To be clear, one should write like regular number there. So.
Yes. When I say num, let's assume regular.
I mean, just for days.
We can write num of all.
It could be confused. Yeah.
Not regular.
There are other variants of num. This is regular num. I'm just saying the word terminology.
Yeah. Principle.
Yes.
We'll get to non-principle later.
Yes. So remind me. So this is a Cartesian categories.
This is a category.
this is
each of these is a D of home is a category, right?
Home is a category, yes.
So it's not in, not it's sensible to propose that this is a mod.
At least that a mod maps there.
Right. And I guess this is more structured than this, but this is definitely compatible with this.
So no. One would, according so what would make sense is that a choice of this J 1 2
yes.
will define for you a particular object in this category.
Exactly, which I call a mod.
But
this A, I also had a functor from this to a mod. I was hoping that somehow this functor would help for free with from just the fact that this list in this case.
Just a second, because it doesn't quite make sense to me.
Yeah,
just 1 second. So,
how about you want to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's just make it here. Anyways,
sure.
So, all right. Okay. So, that's it. Fix. D1, D2, and fix a G1, G2.
That's right.
Okay, let's see what we expect associated with that.
G1, for now, is just any morphism in your two categories.
In my two categories of boundary conditions. It's it.
You look at of your category boundary conditions, which we still don't know what it is.
That's right. But one can kind of really talk about this rigorously mathematically. In some way, algorithmic way. I mean, that's maybe another thing we can discuss.
It's a category with homes of vertex algebras.
Right, but I'm saying that at the classical level, this has some kind of concrete description in terms of derived simplex geometry and BB formalism. And
so let's assume that we took one of these. Let's see what we kind of what we expect to get from there. One thing that we expect that there is V1 of
yes.
This is an object in our local to category. And we obtain, let me call it J12 of S1.
Yes.
We obtain
a morphism.
Yeah.
From V of S1.
Yeah. It's an object in HOM from V1 S1, V2 S2. So this
S1
is
S1 still.
Yes. This is an a priori existing category.
Yes.
And this is a particular object. So far, but this category, we don't know what it is. So far, it does not make sense that this be modulus for a vertex algebra.
Okay.
So there is no semantics to say it so far. So now I would like to understand where the vertex algebra comes in.
Yes.
So let me just say what we have algorithmically, and then we try to put the vertex algebra in there. In addition, what we have, let me say, L of J12, this would be a functor from L of D1 to L of D2.
Do you
believe that or not?
No.
What does that mean? And
is L...
So L of D1 is a factorization category?
Yes. But no, I want the vertex algebra. Okay, if functors between two factorization categories means vertex algebra, then yes.
No.
Or conformal blocks for a vertex algebra, or something like that.
No. No. So you might not be happy with this. You may think of this J more like a pairing.
So I think this is precisely the place where, see, if J had been a topological bound junction,
yeah,
then the answer would have been yes. So for every topological junction from B1 to B2, you get a functor from LB1 to LB2.
Yes.
But because J is not topological,
yeah,
then you need, this is not okay.
Yeah.
This does not make sense.
Uh-huh.
What makes sense is that there is some algebra. Such that there is a functor to A mod.
This is the compactification statement.
I see.
So there is an A of J12.
This is not, actually, it's not very different from what I wrote.
Okay.
It's modular finiteness. It's basically what you're saying, instead of saying something is chiral, we say something lacks chiral.
Okay.
It's very close. So semantically, it's not much different. Okay,
so
now the question is, how is A mod related? How is A related to J1 to S?
I was hoping that J1 to S was literally A mod.
But you cannot say this because A mod is an abstract category. And again, A mod is an abstract category, and J1 to S is an object in another abstract category. So there is no language for them to be equal.
So I should have said there is a functor. So there should be a functor from J1 to S to A mod, or vice versa. Now they confuse which direction.
But at some point, Dade wanted to say that boundary conditions form a three category.
Well, if I look at topological junctions, yes, but they don't.
No, let's look at. Okay.
So perhaps I should say it like this: at least there is a functor from J1 to S1 to A mod.
Yeah, this doesn't quite make sense in the language, because J12 is an object of an a priori existing category.
Okay.
Category, two category.
Two category.
Category. J12 is a morphism, and morphisms...
It's a morphism.
Morphisms form a category. Okay, I see. Morphism.
So it's a category.
No, it's an object of a category. Oh. So we'll see examples, and
if boundary conditions actually form the three category, then J1
No, sorry, okay.
Then J1 would be here.
Okay. No, good. So this makes no sense. Okay. V of S1 are objects in the two category. So, why not? These are objects in the two category, right? So homes are in one category, right?
Yes, this home is a one category, and we get an object in this one category.
Ah, no, right. So that's the point. I don't get an object in the true category. I get the actual true category, or at least a functor into the true category. Because the junction is holomorphic, there are conformal blocks. There are.
So that's what I want to understand.
So right. So whenever you're tempted to do things with J12, you need to be careful because you should not do things that you would do with a topological object. So, for example, let me take an example in one-dimensional lore. Chern-Simons theory. Chern-Simons theory is a topological field theory. If you give me a topological boundary condition, it will give you one vector in the space of states of Chern-Simons theory. If you give me a homomorphic boundary condition, it will give you a vertex algebra whose conformal blocks have a functor into the space of state of Chern-Simons theory, which often is just identity functor.
Can you say that one more time?
So, if you take Chern-Simons theory on some space manifold on a cylinder. Division Simons theory on C times R plus. And here I put a boundary condition. If it's a topological, then it prepares a state. There is no confusion. But if it's not topological, if it's holomorphic, then it can prepare many states because it can put many different local operators. And even if you don't put local operators, just by doing mapping class group transformations, you can get a variety of states.
So you're saying if a holomorphic boundary condition gives you what again?
So what you get is it's a functor from conformal blocks of whatever algebra of local operators lives here. I never remember which direction should the arrow go. I get confused. I think actually the functor goes the other way. Into the space of states for Chern-Simons theory.
Okay.
And then I remember which way the arrow goes. I get confused. I would have said
this way.
The space of four blocks also depends on the Riemann surface. So basically you have...
That's right.
So you have a Riemann surface.
And a space of states attached to it. And a space of conformal blocks attached to it. And there is a functor from one to the other. I think the direction of travel actually depends on the conformal blocks being dot of covariance or invariance. That's part of what my confusion is. So this should not be possible, but the only definition of this is that this is, so you could have a functor into here.
That's what I want.
So, I also propose that this might be a mod. Like in the direction of the arrow, I don't swear on it, on the direction of the arrow, might be the other way. I've read them both and that will erase the wrong one. But I feel that there should be a relation between this functor and this statement.
So by the way, let me just recover A. So it's basically what I said is kind of, it's just exactly this duality game.
Mm-hmm. So let me start. It's a, I think it's a functor, think of it as a pairing between V1 bar and V2.
Yes.
So let me start with a functor from here to that. So both are factorization categories.
Yes.
So it has a factorization functor, but this functor is what's called non-unital.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's non-unital, it sends a unit. So necessarily factorization algebra, and that's A.
Okay.
So the A is the recovery just from this. So let me just. I don't know what to call it, so units.
Yes.
Well, maybe. So, yeah. So right, if you, this is L of J12, and A is L J12 evaluated over here.
Yes.
So this is so far so good, but again, I'm still confused about.
Mm-hmm.
Again, so here we have a well defined category.
Yes.
Attached to a circle, and we are trying to see what kind of data J12 gives in there, and we're still not in agreement. You're saying it's not one particular object, it's something more complicated.
Well, maybe I don't know what homes of factorization categories. These are not factorization categories, these are local categories. Let's see examples.
But they are actually factorization algebra objects, maybe, or something like
this
that.
This is true.
Yeah, I think maybe in the three examples you described, we can actually see.
Yeah, so let's
because
maybe.
Some examples of junctions are null, right?
Yeah, let's see
so,
these examples and see
right.
what we get. So maybe in this case we'll be able to get.
You can pick either Neumann and Nam or Neumann, Neumann and Dirichlet.
Okay, so let's start with Neumann and Nam.
Sorry,
the
two views of the algebra.
Let's see who is who. All right. So we'll write both of these guys. So there's a particular junction between Neumann and Nam. So J Neumann. So let's first write this. So here. So we have Casimir-Lipsky category for G. Here we have Whittaker category of Riemann. And I'll write a functor such that the resulting vertex algebra will be W.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just write it. So here's how this functor goes. So, well, that is at the top, you can take an object of the affine Grassmannian and act by it on any object Casimir-Lipsky category of the Casimir-Lipsky representation. But if just here you start with Whittaker, kind of your object of the affine Grassmannian matters only up to translation and respective characters, so you don't get, so your Casimir-Lipsky representation is defined up to translation by an element of N of T against the character. So, the representation is not well defined, but what is well defined is Drinkwitz-Sokolov production. So basically, kind of, it's
it's some input cohomology of M of T with character of the convolution. And you get to vector spaces. And now if you indeed evaluate this functor on unit objects, you get the W algebra. So that's what we see. So now let's try to see what we get here.
Yes.
Okay, so I don't have the brain. Sam, can you help me?
You're computing the hams?
Yes, I'm doing on the circle.
So you're getting the category of modules on the W algebra.
Yeah. So let's go to the entire HOM. So it's a HOM between with the categorical loop group and category representations.
Yes.
Yeah, it is the category of modules for the W algebra.
But
so
you were unhappy about saying statements like that a moment ago.
It's a particular category. Yeah, it's a particular category. Indeed. Yeah. So B of Neumann.
And Neumann of S1, we should call it Neumann of S1. Not B of Neumann, but Neumann of S1.
Well, I'm still unhappy. So this entire category, before I specified anything, before I specified the J,
mm-hmm.
this category is W modules.
Yep.
So here's what confuses me. So see, when I wrote here, it didn't feel that there was any choice involved. I kind of followed my nose. I wrote a very obvious functor, and I got my W algebras. W algebra here.
Yeah, but you were somehow, so you were implicitly attaching Kasmudi to Kasanlustig.
Let's see if we've done that. And that's the previous step.
But you could, there are many algebras which have, you could have put in there. So there are many algebras which have an action of Kasanlustig times Whittaker. In principle.
Let's say we understood already the B's.
Well, all I'm saying is that when you map this, you said the image of one is W algebra, you implicitly put Kasmudi there to start with.
Not really.
Where did Kasmudi come from?
Okay. You're saying that I made a choice.
Yes. If you made a different choice of algebra, you have gotten the actual solo production of this other choice.
Correct. You're saying that implicitly I said that your J Neumann num prescribed me a recipe. So I use a particular recipe here.
Yes.
I use convolution and I took various reductions. There is a recipe involved there.
Yes.
So, but now let's, before we do this recipe, just let me identify this HOM as is. When I look at this HOM as is, I get W algebra. So now
I could get other algebras.
Well, Moritz equivalent.
Yes.
Moritz equivalent.
Well, which have the same conformal blocks, if yes, which would be like equivalent in some sense.
Yeah. So here's my question. It seems like this particular choice of J. So maybe all it says is that...
But this is the J that supports W algebra.
So here's a conjecture. Let me just put the conjecture here.
Yes.
So J, by this recipe, gives A.
Yes.
Now, this is a well-defined category. Then I repeat what you just said. Let's say that we have a functor from A mod to this category. This is a category, this is a category, and there's a functor.
Yes.
Let's say that a junction gives us this. And in this particular case, this functor happens to be an equivalent. It's such a nice junction.
Yes.
This functor from W, which arises by this procedure, so this category is an equivalent. So maybe this is the structure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We have a functor in one direction.
Yes.
Let's test it on what you say now, Dirichlet versus Neumann, right?
Exactly. Now you could look at Neumann with Dirichlet.
Yeah. Yes, let's look at that and see if this survives the test.
All right, so what do we have?
Sorry, can you re-summarize where we are right now?
Okay, I'm trying to see a junction, what kind of structure it gives us. I'm trying to say what it buys us.
So we know already what junction means mathematically?
We don't know what boundary conditions means mathematically yet.
Well, I mean, we know approximately, right?
So, boundary conditions form a two-category.
Yes.
And junctions are just one morphism in this category.
Just one morphism.
Sorry, zero. One morphism.
But 3D boundary, so 3D boundary condition, and the condition for the theory are very special objects in the two category.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes.
So that means that junctions form a category.
Junctions between two given boundary conditions form a category.
Okay.
Fix an object J in this category.
Okay.
So here's what it gives, what we see in this example. One thing it gives the following, you consider L of V1, kind of dual, times L of V2, these are two factorization categories. You can say, consider that as a product, there's a function from there to that.
Okay.
Then you can take the image of the unit and call it A.
What's unit?
So these are.
In this example, I understand, but in general.
These are factorization categories.
Factorization category.
They happen to be units of this property. That could get current algebra, call it A. Then, this official structure that we seem to have is that A mod, which is a category, maps to the category of Holmes. Sasha, it's for you. All right, let's do Dirichlet versus Neumann.
Presumably, so there was a relation between B1 of S1 and L of B1, right?
Yes, specifically, this was arc invariance inside the FSR.
That's right. So does this relation buy you anything? Could it be enough to prove already that A mod was the right thing to put there?
That we'll have this?
Yes.
Possibly. I can. It's an exercise for us.
Is it true?
It seems very reasonable.
It's some dualizability questions.
What's the question?
So define a vertex algebra by the image of one.
Yeah.
Is it true that A mod automatically maps, that's not so obvious, to B1 of this one to this home space? It doesn't seem that way.
No.
Okay, let's write it down some. I can record it and we'll think about it.
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's do Dirichlet versus Neumann and see who's who. So, what is this? This is D1 of the finder smiling. It's still.
Yeah, it's still turned on those two.
D1 of the finder smiling. And what seems to be the functor, you just act and forget structure.
Yes.
You just forget the vector spaces. And when you apply it to the unit, you get your cosmic chiral algebra.
Yes.
Okay, now let's see what happens here. So when we do home, you do home from Dirichlet of S1 to Neumann of S1. Dirichlet of S1 is just D1, just the loop group. Home from it is the target category. So this is just Kac-Moody modules. And in this case, we have, how do we know Kac-Moody algebra? We call it PG. There is indeed a functor, and it also happens to be an equivalence.
Yes.
It's again such a nice junction that it's again an equivalence. We can try to test Nam against Neumann. Is it something?
Already Nam and Neumann, and Nam and Dirichlet is kind of similar.
Similar.
Is there an expected junction which will give an equivalence like this?
Yeah, well, it's the junction which supposed as moving.
Okay.
Yes, it's the basic junction between Dirichlet and Neumann. and it supports Kazmuri.
Ah.
The vertex algebra is Kazmuri. And,
ah.
And you get Kazmuri mod.
Yeah, but that's an equivalent.
Right.
No, I want one where this will not be an equivalent.
Oh, well, I don't know any.
Ah.
I don't think it would be easy. I mean, you might.
Okay, so in fact, so my question was in some sense answered. So in other words, this is the structure that we see.
Now, can you compose junctions?
Can we have a 5 minutes break,
sure.
Just to catch breath?
Because
I have other questions, but of a different sort. I just have to. I'll try to compose junctions for those. Or did someone else ask questions?
So you get it as follows. So this functor, well, this thing has an action of a group.
Yes.
So this thing will automatically upgrade the module.
So is this kind of lecture for Dennis or like for public? Like, what is going on?
What makes it factorizable? Or are you assuming it is?
Assuming
it is.
I was asking what structure on B of S1 we have so that if you take objects invariant with respect to arcs, you get the functor to the modulus of the
bunch. Oh, yeah, sure.
I think the following should be true. So you have an action of the Lewis group on this category.
Yeah.
So your functor automatically upgrades to a G of K at the invariant. EMS 1 to D modules on the Lewis group. My functor to best automatically upgrades to a G of K. No, to D module.
It's the right answer.
Correct.
It's not that dot.
Yes. Correct. And then?
So then, well, you do this at all points, you'll get something to G of B doubles. Well, so then if you're doing this for your L of B, you have S1's G double brackets T. Yeah? Then this will map to D modules on the Bethlehem,
yes.
And then you can do a push forward. So
do you think it's that?
Well, it gives the right answer in all cases.
No, specifically for Kazmuri, for the Neumann brain.
So for Kazmuri, yeah, so in the case of Kazmuri, this forgetful functor is giving you localization onto here. So for instance, the vacuum is going to differential operators on the vacuum here is going to differential operators on.
I'm having trouble verifying it at the moment. Let's remember to just verify it tonight. We don't have to do it now, but let's just remember it and do it.
I think somehow this is this might be the statement that somehow if you have a band recognition wrapping the circle, it can close off as a cigar. I don't know. This map to vect maybe is the disk somehow. I don't know.
No, yeah, I
have to.
Sorry.
So, your question about composition.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you believe that boundary conditions form a category, of course you can compose junctions.
Yes.
So, but your real question would be, so what happens to this vertex algebra, right? That it has this particular shape, right?
And is it automatic? The problem is when this is automatic, the vertex algebra combines by extension.
Extension meaning just it's kind of what you wrote, direct sum over these
yes.
elements. That's what you mean,
that's
right? It seems indeed very plausible, because the way you would do it is this. So
you have LB1, you say LB2 tensor LB1 bar. So you can handle like this, then you put it on the other side, and you've got this pump in one direction.
Mm-hmm.
So just can't cross it, like what you're inserting, you're inserting the regular object in the LB1.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right, the diagonal inside there.
Yeah, you're, and this is exactly the sum of those.
Inside.
So that seems very close.
Okay. Then, that all you need to really believe is that there is a generalization of Neumann, which is labeled by two numbers, P and Q.
And you have the algorithm. So if you believe in Lemmas,
right,
you have an algorithm.
That's right.
So in Rover, so is it, what is that? So there is an extension of. So we believe that local Lemmas is an equivalence of this. Two categories attached to this.
Yes.
The current is an extension, but it's an equivalence not only of these two categories, it actually also gives an equivalence of these two categories of boundary conditions. These boundary conditions is
inside there, yes.
There's an object of these two categories, extra structure, and then
mm-hmm.
language also gives there. And to get these two numbers, it's basically what you do back and forth with this language reality, but multiplying by.
That's right.
That's what you do.
That's right.
So let me ask a few more kind of disparate questions.
Mm-hmm.
So one was about, at the very beginning of the talk, there was this thing about the angle.
Yes.
I didn't understand.
Discrete angle.
It's theta?
Theta angle.
Yeah. Yeah, so that kind of surprises me. Yeah, let me ask you, when you say about the global form of the group, global meaning group versus the algebra?
That's right.
Okay. So I thought that if you have a fixed global form of a group,
yes.
the only parameter is what I call kappa.
Right. So this is not correct, although even for physicists, this has been absorbed slowly.
Please tell us what's the.
So when you define your gauge theory, you have your trace of a square. Trace of F squared action, but you can add some other topological action, right? Pretty much is anything that takes a manifold with connection and gives you a phase and which is compatible with, you know, glue manipulating manifolds. The question of what classifies precisely topological actions is a subtle, interesting, and still ongoing question, but I think in this setup, it's roughly something like H4 of Van G, of BG, value U1. Some kind of fourth cohomology of BG.
This is very, very familiar.
So when you compactify on a Riemann surface, this fourth cohomology of BG gives you a true cohomology of Van G, valued in U1, which is a germ. So, right, there is a, when you compare on a Riemann surface, there is a map from what is, so a bundle is a map from the surface to BG, which means have a map from surface times band G to BG. So I pull back my cohomology class, I integrate it over the surface, and I get an issue of band G.
Okay, so that's... So okay, let me repeat your answer to mathematicians.
Yes.
Those who are interested, because that really interests me.
But, okay, so it might be maybe something that we really missed before.
And I should say that there is a further variant that might matter.
What's that?
So if you, there is a matter of spin manifolds versus not spin manifolds.
Maybe.
So sometimes you might want to use spin C versions of bundles. But let's leave that aside for now.
Spaces, this would be basically driven as E and M components of Banaghi and Pantev, right?
E and M?
Well, I'm using notations from Kapustin and Litton, but Tony and Ron, they have components of Hitch and Stack, which are also labeled by Jordanus, and it's related to center and global topology of the group.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's precisely this discrete data that David is talking about. Except that I don't know precise map between physics paper of Nati and this discrete data that labels Hitch and Stack components.
If I ignore spin subtleties, you can integrate this H4 on a sphere. I mean, if you give me a magnetic weight and electric weight, you can think about them as spheres with a bundle, spheres with a G bundle. So Nati and the others present the choice as a choice of which lines are included in your theory, which Tooth lines and which Wilson lines. So the global form of the group tells you which magnetic charges you can use. Then for each magnetic charge, you need to decide which electric charges do you use. This is a torsor for the weights, but it's not necessarily the weights. So this choice of electric charges is like a linear function on co-weights, and the magnetic charge is a co-weight. And so at the end of the story, you can convert it into a bilinear form on co-weights. And this bilinear form on co-weights can be thought of as integrating H4 on a product of two spheres. So that's the map. There is a little piece of extra information which has to do with spin structure dependence, which probably has to do with integrating over CP2, but I've not been able to extract it well yet. But for example, if you just do SL2, right, it's not true that geometric Langlan relates is SL2 bundles and PSL2 bundles if you don't pick a spin structure.
Correct.
There is a gerb that twists one of the two sides. So that can also be included, but it's on top of this. It has to do with this working on non-spin manifolds, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly. Because physicists, in the paper of Nati, they write the duality group on spin manifolds, and nobody has written down the paper for the duality group on non-spin manifolds. Yes.
So are you saying that? Let me not do duality.
Mm-hmm.
As we see so far, what we saw in math is that you need to choose a spin structure to form Langlan's duality. But
yes.
Each side is defined without a mention of spin structure. So let me not mention the picture. Spin structure, I'll be just on one side.
Yes.
So basically, I'll try to see what I can possibly twist my category by.
Right.
So what I do see is that if you consider H4, you consider BG as a topological space,
mm-hmm.
times a C, that's a curve,
yes.
With coefficients in the C star.
Yes.
So it is true that gadgets like this allow, if I have a gadget there, I have a twisting.
And if you want to do things that are universal, you would even not put the curve there.
So I'm happy not to put the curve for the time being.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
Universal.
That's right.
Right. So now there are twistings that they call kappas.
Mm-hmm.
So let me say Katsumoto levels.
Yes.
And there's a map from here to here.
Yes.
Are you saying that this map is not surjective?
Yes.
This is something I've missed. So what's the first example?
SL4.
SL2 will not do.
Huh? Well, SL2. No, you could in SL2, you can absorb it into a change in the periodicity of your.
Okay. This is something I really like to understand because it's
so when you say k, right, is it normalized so that the minimum shift is by one, or?
Oh, these are. So this is a C vector space.
Yes, but it's.
It's a C. If the root is SL4.
Yes.
SL4, yeah. This is one-dimensional C vector space. This is just, it's multiples of the Killing form, but
right. So,
complex multiples of the Killing form.
That's right. For SL2, you don't see anything new, but for SL4, you already see something.
So let me see how. So here's my problem. So I calculate this, and this group is C star.
Mm-hmm.
And this is C. This is the exponential map. So
are you sure it's a star?
So if I'm sure that this is a star,
yes.
I'm sure this is a star. So let me tell you what it is with any coefficients.
Sorry, for SL4 mod Z2.
Oh.
That's what I want meant. Sorry, the global, I was talking about the Lyadra. For the group SL4 mod Z2, I claim that there is something different.
That's very possible. Let me just let me calculate for a second.
Yes.
Gosh, I just wrote the paper about this, but
not from the paper.
Not once. Where is the chat? You're saying that, yeah. So you're doing SL4 mod Z2, and you're saying the group is clear.
Yes.
Let's see. It's
a two component.
You're saying there is Z mod to Z there.
Yes.
I'm going to test it in a moment. So I see something different. Let you tell me.
This is star again.
It's what?
This is star again.
Yeah, I'll show.
I might remember wrong.
So it's
possible that it's the exponential map that is
things that are not reachable by just shifting kappa by.
So what I see is this, that if you put in a sigma,
mm-hmm.
the sigma is compact, very indeed. So if you put this
mm-hmm.
for any sigma, doesn't matter which, that would be, well, in your example, okay, let me tell you what it is in general. It's quadratic forms of a co-wave lattice,
yes.
Z coefficients, so
yes.
if you do this simple,
right, that's what I.
Mm-hmm. So this will give you just a C star, direct sum from the fundamental group G into C star. So if you take SO4 1 Z2,
yes,
that will give you Z mod 2 Z.
Okay.
So you're right. So basically, for any compact Riemann surface,
mm-hmm.
there is a way to twist the theory for any compact Riemann surface. Kind of functorial in sigma. It doesn't come from BG.
Okay. But
you need a sigma, but it's compatible with pullbacks with respect to sigma. Rather, it's multiplies by the degree of the map. So maybe you can test this. So if you have a map Riemann surfaces of even degree, if you pull back a twisting,
mm-hmm.
it will trivialize.
So this is W2 of the, can I think of this as W2?
What's W2?
The second shift.
Of what? Of
the
VG?
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes from there. But like it comes from second cohomology of VG, but then you're multiplying by H2 of the Riemann surface. That gives you global.
So
sick. Yeah. Okay, you're right.
Okay, I'm still wondering about the time sigma. Perhaps there is like it. Perhaps there is different definition of what H4 of BG means. That for you requires to put sigma explicitly. I'm confused, but unfortunately, Theo is not here.
So, you are effectively twisting Bung G on a sigma, right?
Yes. Yes.
It's a way to. All right.
Another funny thing is that there are interesting S operations between these twisted bundles. And
can you say, okay, so now I'm very interested to see what Langlund says. Suppose I didn't have this component, I have kappa and kappa inverse.
Yes.
I knew what to do. It was an equivalence.
Mm-hmm.
But now you call this guy state angle?
Discrete angle, yes.
So you throw in one of these. What S is an equivalence between what and what?
It's an equivalence between G, some global form of G with some discrete theta angles, to some global form of G dual with some theta angles.
You started with, say I started with G as is.
Yes.
With some theta angle. You're saying that on the dual side, it will no longer be the Langlund's dual of G.
That's right.
I may have to change.
Yes. So for example, among the duality orbits, so I was drawing some duality orbits, right? I was looking at S operations on PSL, four things, but depending on the discrete angle, the S operation could map it to SL4, it could map it to SL4 mod Z2, or PSL4.
Okay, this is, it's news, I think, for all mathematicians who've been looking at it.
And even for PSL2, I'm claiming that PSL2 twisted by a gerb, it's mapped to itself by S. Which,
can you say one more time?
So if you take PSL2,
yeah.
Twisted by the gerb square root of the minimal bundle,
yeah.
There is an S functor from this to itself, well, with 1 over k.
I see.
And for example, this statement I was making that L inverse tensor D maps to L tensor D,
yeah.
this holds, for example, in this setup.
Yeah.
because D is a good twisted module and L inverse, and so D is a jerk twisted one.
Okay.
Wait, how does it?
But there should be no that I can cut it.
Yeah.
So
let's ask a level.
How can there be this S duality between PGL2 and PGL2?
No, SL. So GL2 is different. GL2 goes to itself.
But PSL2 and PSL2, you say, right?
Yes.
This map is still surjective, so how can
No, it's not. It's surjective for SL2, but not for PSL2.
Ah, okay.
So
as soon as
you have the non-trivial, the group is not simply connected,
you've got
this new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's really new things.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I think it's new.
So, but they have two values of parameters, which we could call E and L, which take values in center of a simply connected form of a group. So you have Z times Z, and you have pairs of such objects, let's call it E and L, and they transform as doublet under SL to Z. So SL to Z are some such pairs in a natural way. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that I can find it talking about. So one is interpreted as German, as the other is...
They're looking at the quasi-classical situation. Classical.
For example, you believe that this exists classically, right? And this doesn't have anything to do with quantum.
Quantum meaning deformation away from it has nothing to do with
quantum.
Very
classical.
One step at a time. Now let's take it classical thing also. Do you think it
I don't know. Let's think about it tonight.
That's not the same Nikita. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, we need to be far more careful. So the question is, does it exist like at the Hilbert level? That's the question. I do not.
For each of them, there should be component of the Hilbert space, right?
Yes.
So I
would end up I think that this data is, you know, which gerb do you put on which component? And then it's just...
I think it's classical geometry in the sense of geometry. Geometry.
If you restrict sufficiently the definition of mathematicians.
Okay.
And maybe in the examples I've seen of kernel vertex algebra, somehow they're always compatible with these gerbs twisting in a nice way.
Basically, three more questions. It's more about Ed's talk. So let me just voice them, and then we'll see if you guys want to answer or we want to wait till tomorrow. Right. So one is he said words that I didn't understand, and they sounded like this, that dimension to defects have to do with ramification.
Mm-hmm.
So that's theme one that I would like to understand. So theme two, so he mentioned this theory TG,
mm-hmm.
So later in your talk, so he had said that it is the Langlands dual of Dirichlet. I would like to understand what's the semantics for this?
Yes.
That's question two. And, yeah, question three is this non-principal noun thing.
Yes.
So, because we don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't really understand.
Yes.
This is the classical, it's non-quantum methods.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand what they are. So I don't know.
Can I add something maybe to this question? So I think that the way I'm used to think about this is TOG is some kind of three-dimensional theory with some symmetry, and apparently there's an idea, it relates to this discussion that one way to construct these boundary conditions is that if you have a three-dimensional theory, maybe with some supersymmetry, which has G-symmetry, whatever it means, then you can, to that you can attach a boundary condition for four-dimensional people. Am I right?
Yes.
And so this T of G arises this way. I mean, T of G is actually a three-dimensional theory with G symmetry. In fact, has G times G check symmetry, but that's the next step. But it's a theory. It's a three-dimensional theory with G symmetry. And to any three-dimensional theory with G symmetry, you're supposed to be able to attach a boundary condition.
Boundary condition in this four-dimensional
theory. In boundary condition of the type that you're discussing here.
Yes. So that's what he meant.
Yes.
So maybe we can start with this question, so I know you can comment. Okay, so we're talking about the Langlands dual of Dirichlet. So it is a boundary conditions.
Yes.
And then maybe we want to ask the same questions as here. So maybe,
absolutely.
So namely, we want to understand what is L of that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what's L of that? Let me ask, what's L of that? We know.
L of that is just the modulus on the fine grass spanial of G dual.
As is.
Well, I should say it's something which is equivalent to that. The presentation of that something might be different depending on your definition, on how you build this T of G.
I see. Okay, that's fair enough. But then there is a mysterious functor from there to D modulus on band G.
Yes.
Which will be take direct image from Feingrad-Mann G dual to band G dual and apply a Langlands transform.
Yes.
But then there is some mysterious way to go directly.
Mm-hmm.
But which we don't explicitly understand.
Well, there is a vertex algebra for conformal blocks will be that.
I mean the master kernel.
Yes.
So basically, to answer this question, we use the universal kernel.
That's right. So you do, and presumably modules for that will be the image.
Okay, that's fair enough. So once we understand this master of chiral algebra, we'll understand that.
Yes.
And can you say what is T of G of S1?
Yes, so in general for a 3D theory, so these 3D theories are again topological field theories,
yeah,
in the commas. When you put it on a circle, you're gonna get a HUD theory.
Yeah.
So a category.
Are they supposed to be topological? I thought they were supposed to be kind of holomorphic.
They're topological. I mean, there is a topological twist, which is the deformation of a holomorphic twist.
Yes.
So this category is just a property of the 3D theory.
Yes.
So it's a category of... Now, when you couple it to the four-dimensional theory, there must be a way to promote this category to an object in the two category that we've been discussing.
The question is, which one is that? Can we identify it?
Right, we can look at simpler examples and then build up to T of G. For example, a simpler so if I take the group to be SL2, there is a boundary condition which is a modification of Neumann, where the 3D theory is just two hypermultiple. Actually, yeah, one hypermultiple to the SL2 action. That the corresponding vertex algebra is OSP1/2. So whatever calculations you want, you do them with this vertex algebra, and it produces things, right? So for example, conformal blocks for OSP1/2 can be defined over band SL2. Or modules for OSP1/2 would be a category with a G with an SL2 of K action. Now, it's not completely. So as I was mentioning, to go work a generic K, these 3D theories have to be deformed further. Otherwise, you're working a K to infinity. So the calculations in the 3D theory give you the K to infinity limit of things.
there is extra work to do to deform it to generic K, and I don't know how to do it in general. And it's not, it's rarely possible, incidentally. So at K to equal to infinity, you have many boundary conditions. But at generic K, you have much fewer. You know, not... just a fact. So I cannot give a recipe for a generic theory. There is just a handful of theories for which this can be done. But so I would guess in that case, I would have said that going to the K to infinite limit, OSP 1 slash 2 collapses to something simpler, which is just SU 1 slash 1. So true fermionic currents. And so you can look at models of that. And that is indeed the category of lines in the 3D theory. So the category that 3D theory attaches to a circle. Small modules for this algebra. So in general, given a 3D theory, you can compute this category and then you can check if you can deform it to finite K.
All right, so
with Kevin, we have developed the technology to compute vertex algebras out of 3D theories. But there are also relationships to things that people can do in symplectic duality. Right, you.
My first question about ramifications. Can you comment on what he meant?
Well, in this 4D setup, so he already reduced you guys on S1 cross S1. So that was the torus, which has a simplicity and so on. We have 4 dimensions.
Yes.
So now 4 manifold was split into 2 manifold cross Riemann surface C.
Yes.
And in this 2 plus 2 split, there is obvious role of some 2 dimensional object. You just say that it sits at the point on Riemann surface C,
yes,
where we do the geometric methods. So these defects are labeled by additional data, which in simple cases matches nicely ramification data.
So, but what's the semantics? I mean, like defects, what do they do?
Well, in the two category, there are another way to produce objects in the two category. Because you take the cigar.
For example, D modules of affine flag.
That's right. The Gukov Witten defects are the modules of affine flag.
Instead of L of G being this procedure, it's some other procedure, right?
It's not
L
of G,
L
of G.
It's, yeah,
L
of
G
procedure.
Right. And now there is an L of D, comma sigma, where sigma is a surface defect.
Oh, perfect. I got you. So, surface defects, will you form what? Two category?
Well, this is a good question. I don't know, actually. It's a question of OPE of this object, and I have no idea.
So you have a particular list of sigmas, right?
Because it should have a monoidal structure, right?
Yeah.
It should be a monoidal true category.
This has not been worked out or explored.
So basically you work with particular sigmas, examples of sigmas.
Exactly.
Right?
So what we did with that, we tried to enumerate them and produced a huge list. And already there was a challenge of trying to make sure that it behaves nicely under Langlands duality, just the Z2 operation. I was talking about much more general.
So for each sigma here, there corresponds to sigma there.
Exactly. And even there as well, there's a lot of pain and suffering. So
let me make a proposal to what we are thinking, and then you guys will, I want to hear what you guys. So what we are thinking is that the sigmas, the form of two category, which is exactly this local category.
I think it's too big.
It's too big.
So when we say a sigma, when you define surface defect, you wouldn't use arbitrary derivatives of the fields at that point, right? Or carve out a hole and make something completely crazy there.
Yeah, that
wouldn't
come up. In some sense, they're going in the right direction because I don't also want to limit as just to first order poles, so we have to include this wild ramification and so on. But
I want wild ramification.
But now you're too wild.
So you might want to put some bound on how.
Yeah, wild it can be.
How wild. Finite wild. Finitely wild.
Your quantum also, right?
We don't know. So the one starts here, we don't know.
But you allow yourself to be quantum, right?
Yes.
Non trivial.
Yeah.
I see.
I mean, I'm not sure that the constraint will be very sharp, but I think it should be possible to distinguish a boundary called that from a surface defect. For example, the surface defects won't, well, I don't know. It's, what are the generalizations of the modules in the fine flag?
The notion of home from a boundary can differ from a 3D boundary in addition to a surface defect.
Yes.
So they're very close, yeah.
No, but I mean, this is such a notion of home between them, and this home is what? This
it's
home
not
is
really
category.
Home.
This home is a category. Or
it's a category where the surface defect hits the boundary. So there are lines there, so it's a category. It's a module category for the lines on the boundary, for L of B.
So for any surface defect, we consider this home, and this will be a module category of L. Module in factorization sense.
Yes, that makes sense. So let me tell you what it sounds to me like.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, we start with something huge, and we do this on the loop group.
Yes.
And so here's the possible surface defects. Okay, one is the kind of the most obvious defect, just take invariance with respect to G arcs. You get no defect. It's a Pythagoras minus. Another, you take Iwahori. You take an invariance with respect to Iwahori subgroup, and this is, you put the fine flag variety. But
let me repeat your question. So the surface defect for you now is going to be what? It's going to be a category with two
surface defect, it's a two category.
It's a two category. So
apparently, it's a full subcategory inside our local.
Okay, so which and you are now describing the objects.
I'm saying particular objects.
Particular objects.
Yeah. Object one, just demons on the Pythagoras line. Object two, demons on the Pythagoras lines. Object three is what in their wild ramification. So they take some kind of congruent subgroup, maybe, and so instead of asking to be invariant, you are, let's say, twisted invariant. You have some Arden Schreier, I don't know how you guys call it. Some exponential.
Well, we use levies and analogs of that for a while.
Some equivariance conditions.
Yeah.
So this is still kind of effectively modding out GFT by something large.
Yes.
The category is still small and manageable. But when I say don't be too wild, kind of, you don't want to be whole.
We're still looking at the point, we're not carving a hole. It's just a point with derivatives.
Yeah.
What's home between this and the boundary condition?
I guess it's just, so if you take some kind of equivariance, you take your B of S1.
B of S1.
You take B of S1.
Take B of S1, just take invariance.
Yeah.
Invariance there.
Yeah.
But wait, but it's supposed to be module over L of B.
Yes.
How is that thing a module over L of B?
Because whatever conditions they. If you wish, B of S1 is a chiral module for L of B. So B of S1 has the following two pieces of structure. It's acted on by the loop group.
Yes.
With a commuting weight, it's a chiral
B of S1
module.
is an object of your local to
yeah. And so it has the following two pieces of structure. It's a chiral module for L of B. And in the commuting weight, it's a module for loop group. So when you take some conditional respect loop group, it's still a chiral model for L of B. So I'm exhausted. So I wanted to ask about this non-principal nulls.
Yes.
Tomorrow?
Okay. If you tell me what you want to know, I can.
So. Is that
just about to ask about the other nouns.
The other what?
Nouns.
Non-principal
nouns.
What do you want to know about them?
yeah, I want to know the following. So, okay, so
we have no pity, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Time is short.
So, I mean, okay, we have D mod. So, first of all, do they make sense with an arbitrary theta, or do you have to do the classical angles? One has to be infinity.
No, it's generic theta.
The non-poles all make sense with any theta, right?
Yes.
Because they're generalized Dirichlet boundary conditions. Well, first of all, Dirichlet is a... Why would something not be okay for any theta? Because theta multiplies the second Chern class, and on a manifold with boundary, it could be ill-defined. Dirichlet means that the gauge field is trivialized on the boundary, which is what you need so that the second Chern class is well-defined. A non-pole is a further structure, but it doesn't affect the fact that the gauge field is trivialized on the boundary. So theta makes sense with any non-pole.
Yes.
So there is a quantum geometric lattice, let me write it like this. So let me ask question in the most general form. So apparently this different non-poles, they correspond to a particular family of objects here.
Yes.
So I want to know what these objects are and what is the Langmuir rules.
So there's something between Whittaker and
and
delta function.
And they are parametrized by...
So you...
They're parametrized by a Milpin and conjugacy class in the dual group, I would have said.
Yes. And the bundles for the commutant of that.
If you want to enrich it, but the universal thing is simply parametrized by a conjugacy class of the dual group.
Of the dual group, so...
The conjugacy class of whichever group you're talking about. I'm assuming usually we consider the non-pole on the automorphic side.
Yes. So
on the Galois side, sorry. And then I was calling it the dual group, G-check.
So the conjugacy class is for G-check, if I want my object here, right?
Yes.
The conjugacy class is wherever the non-pole is.
Okay. So now, if we want the principle, it would be just the Whittaker object, right?
Yes.
And if I want a zero, now
it's a delta function.
It's a delta function,
yes.
At the trivial bundle.
Yes. So
what
general,
you're describing is the D module?
Yes.
Yeah, the D module. Naively, the D module, in any case, is supported at the... Sorry.
On Banen.
Sorry. I'm afraid I tried to join a conversation where I missed too much.
No, we just started. It's a new topic.
That doesn't make me feel better.
So to define Whittaker, you do a pull back, push forward, right?
Correct.
From band N.
Correct.
Now, to a generic rho, you can get now a P.
Yes.
Which goes from... So now you have a pull back, push forward, but... between band G and band Levi, right?
Yeah, so P is the one associated to this nilpotent, right?
Yes.
That is Jacobson-Morozov procedure.
Right.
I see.
So now you take a delta function in band L,
yeah.
Pull it back and push it forward with some exponential, tensor with an exponential. And
I see. And yeah, so these are the num guys.
Yes.
So now my question is, what do they correspond to dually?
It's as hard as dual of Dirichlet. Well, it's intermediately hard.
Well, the dual of the trivial non-pole is the universal kernel of geometric lattice. So you can't expect an easy answer.
Correct.
But there is a theory, T rho of G, which has G symmetry and, well, G dual symmetry now, and L symmetry.
Okay, so fair enough. Let me ask my last question, so before I collapse of exhaustion. So, suppose I'm at zero comma infinity, I'm non-quantum situation. So let's say this is D mod of G non-twisted, and this is this int co loxis G-chair.
Yes.
So there are two things I can ask. I can ask for the noun guys here, and they're given by the exact same procedure.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can try to ask for analogs of noun guys here.
That seemed to me like the more obvious one. Then what you're discussing, the most simple thing you're discussing, is a trivial local system with what I think corresponds to a homomorphism for Arthur's SL2 to G-check. Anyway, with the conjugacy class, nilpotent conjugacy class in G-check. The residue of the pole is a nilpotent conjugacy, a nilpotent element in the Lie algebra.
Can you say it
one more time? Well, the residue of the pole is a nilpotent element.
Yeah.
In G-check.
Yeah.
Any nilpotent element.
Yeah.
There's the zero element. Then we'd have the trivial local system with nothing. At the other extreme, we can make the trivial local system behave like it's regular by giving it a regular nilpotent.
So, and you're saying that you can create particular objects here corresponding to these guys.
Yes.
Yeah, it was not obvious to us. Where's Dima? Yeah.
But you do have, Dima called it A. I usually call it sigma, but it was A in your lecture. Was an infinitesimal automorphism that presumably is of degree 2. Although you didn't say that.
So what we have is the notion of incoherent sheet having support there,
yes.
But we didn't have a way to produce a specific object. Basically, you give me an important element, and there will be a very specific object here that corresponds to it.
We definitely claim there's a canonical element. For every nilpotent conjugacy class in the trivial local system, there's a canonical element.
Yeah, so this is, I would like to know what this object is, because we were not able to produce it. So I would like to know its summary to characterize it.
I don't have any way. David might be able to say something with the chiral algebras, but I don't have any idea what to tell you.
Let me ask this. Suppose your object here is regular, like the regular nilpotent. Would it correspond to the constant
D-module?
Yep. Yes. We call it Neumann boundary conditions, but that's probably the constant D-module.
Okay, that's, I know that particular incoherent sheaf, it's very tricky. Like, I can write down this incoherent sheaf, it's a very tricky guy, but if it's kind of written down. But okay, so.
I'm pleased to say that in the Gauge theory language, it's trivial.
Okay. Okay, but that answers my question.
I don't know when this discussion session is supposed to officially end.
You're the one who's in charge.
I don't have the schedule. But,
food's in 10 minutes, I think. Right? Food is in 10
That's
minutes.
Right. So I guess he's done. Thank you very much for the energy.